You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is the 22nd of June, 2023. Unfortunately, this is not Sven Longshanks. Rather, it's Matthew Raphael Johnson, doing another solo show, and I'll be doing this until Mr. Longshanks is let out of prison. But in fact, I want to cover something similar to that today. And it's not something that I deal with, at least not at a domestic level, all the time. And that's the nature of federal law enforcement. You know, I've been deeply involved in exposing what ISIS is, Al-Qaeda as a U.S. ally in Syria, and how, especially since Oklahoma City, and certainly 9/11, the concept of terrorism has been largely an invented phenomenon. So many of these groups are funded and financed by the U.S., as ISIS is. No, they've suddenly disappeared. They suddenly appeared and now have disappeared. And the only real hammer of ISIS, even if it were a real organization, was Russia. And Putin had many times showed that ISIS was an American creation, because any time the Russians hit them hard, the U.S. would condemn them. No different than in the Philippines, U.S. condemning the fact that the president there, a great man, has won his drug war, showing that there was never a drug war in the U.S. There are two articles that have been published recently by John and Nisha Whitehead. I don't know much about them, but it's interesting. They're a little on the naive side, there's a specific case I want to talk about, but more generally speaking, we know what the FBI is. This has been an ongoing devolution of that organization, which really doesn't have any reason to exist. Inventing crime and searching for crime, the politically corrupt types of crime, stuff like inventing white supremacists or Islamic terrorists, not because they're Muslim, of course, but because they are a possible threat to Israel. We know one thing for certain, and that is Al-Qaeda and ISIS are not only not a threat to Israel, but supportive of it. So the FBI plants undercover agents and even more insidiously informants, people who are promised to either get a lower sentence or no sentence whatsoever. They have written, you know, fake emergency letters, fake media stories to gain access to whatever they need. We know of their intimidation tactics to silence any criticism of the government, but only from the right. And one of the worst, which I want to talk about briefly, taking very impressionable and often mentally ill people and turning them into a make-believe threat. Now the authors write, well, clearly this is not a government agency that appears to understand, let alone respect, the limits of the Constitution. I'm not sure who he's writing to, maybe very young people, but that ship has sailed many, 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 many years ago. It's been a post-constitutional society for decades and decades and decades. Understand that the U.S. is now drowning in crime. especially from non-whites, but whites too, especially in methamphetamine. But disproportionately non-white in the cities. Well, they can't be accused of anything. And this goes back to the Vietnam era, where the 7,000 bombings by the far left in America aren't even spoken of, let alone the almost 300 American soldiers who were killed in the plane crash. As some of you know, the Arrow Air story up in Canada. I have that on my Patreon. I've been talking about that for a long time without a peep from the U.S. government. So as the U.S. is drowning in drugs and crime, the FBI is inventing crime and criminals, so long as the opponent is something they find politically acceptable. There's one example, which is really, I'm not sure really the word, is probably more pathetic in the true sense of the word. Undercover FBI agent, this goes back to 2015, or actually even earlier than that. I remember reading about it at the time, but I kind of forgot about it. Some of their informants sought out and tried to befriend a 16-year-old, clearly a mental case, a refugee from Kosovo, and secretly, you know, finding him, using him, convincing him of things, and getting him to do things, actually quite minor things, and getting him to ramp up his rhetoric such that he can be invented and created as a threat. He sent a few dollars in gift cards. They convinced him of this to ISIS, as if you could just put that in the mail. But of course, the FBI knows very well how to get in contact with him. And now this is Matteo Ventura, but there are others. There are several others. Ventura is one example. The other one, his name is, and it's a very sad case, Sami Osmakach. And he was down in Florida, you know, of course. And The Intercept has done an amazing job of, this is an author named Trevor Aronson, who I've never heard of before. But I cited The Intercept several times, especially in my criticism of the Navy SEALs, because they, of course, ran almost a book-length article on the problems there. And media accept, you know, the media, of course, always accepts everything the FBI says, even if it's completely anonymous. Somehow the intelligence, quote-unquote, is enough for American readers. And I suppose it is true that they don't really realize, the American reader, how any of this stuff. So long as the media says there's a terrorist next door, well, there's a terrorist next door. He gave a martyrdom video around this period of time. And you could tell, and I've said this with the, now this is the person that the FBI had also befriended, young man. You can tell when you hear or read these manifestos, you know, the Dylann Roof case and all of this, you know it's not written by them. This is a very common tactic, even at the local level, of, you know, a victim impact statement, especially when the victim is anonymous, that clearly they've never written. I've come across dozens of these, and you could almost immediately spot all the contradictions. Clearly this is written by someone who had no idea what they were talking about. And this young man in Kosovo said things like, this is a call to the truth. It is a call to help and aid in the party of Allah, to pay him back for every sister that's been raped and every brother that's been tortured and raped. It goes on for about 8 minutes, and he says that he's going to avenge the death of Muslims in Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, elsewhere. I'm not sure why Pakistan, but he is Muslim, but it was FBI informants that made him into a fanatic. An eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, he says. Woman for woman, child for child. And that was 2012. He was 25 at the time. And that's what the FBI and the Department of Justice called a martyrdom video. And then they had him, this poor kid who had no interest in this before. It was a Days In, actually, where he did it in Tampa. And then they had him deliver what he thought was a car bomb to, of all places, an Irish bar locally. I'm not sure what that has to do with anything, but in his mind, apparently, it's significant. So the FBI invented and completely created a so-called terrorist. In fact, they called him a dangerous lone wolf terrorist. They love the lone wolf thing because it sounds very, very menacing. And he would have bombed this Irish bar in the name of revenge of those killed in Afghanistan. And you know damn well that the American public would have bought it, except for a handful of us. Oh, and then they added for good measure that he would have gone to a local casino and he would have taken hostages there, you know, and then detonating his suicide vest, which they provided for him. They provided everything for him, including the rhetoric, once the police got there. Now, this was this was 2012. This story was written in 2015, and now you have these guys, whiteheads, bringing it up again. And we know what entrapment is, and it certainly doesn't apply anymore. None of the laws apply anymore, really. Entrapment, very specifically, is when a government agency, that is to say a law enforcement agency, cajoles somebody, almost coerces someone, into doing or committing a crime that they never would have normally. I think part of the reason of using informants rather than agents is that they can kind of get around. I'm not sure how the courts have ruled on this specifically. Around the, it has to be a government agency, but if they're working in the pay of the FBI, then it still would apply. But at this point, despite, you know, the media frenzy down there, the government couldn't provide really any evidence that he had any connections to international terrorists, Al-Qaeda, or all these, you know, concocted names that are designed to frighten the American public. He never bought weapons before. He had this beat-up 94 Honda Accord. But he was chosen because of his vulnerability. It was an FBI sting that involved paid informants, as well as full-on trained FBI agents and a full staff. This went on for about 3 months. In his video, which I thought was on YouTube, I can't find it anymore. It may still be on there, but I thought it was taken down long ago, either by YouTube, once this stuff came out, and never really quite came out. The Intercept actually is very good because they have documents from their own sources, which, you know, others normally couldn't get. But every weapon, every bit of money, the FBI provided. FBI even gave him the, you know, fake car bomb that he allegedly was going to detonate in the Irish bar of all places. Even they even paid his taxi cab money. He was a disturbed young man. Now, as I'm reading this story, I vaguely remember it back then, but especially now that I've revisited it, I said, this guy's schizophrenic. Now, I say that, schizoaffective, schizophrenic, I don't care, is because, for among many other reasons, they are the most vulnerable. They are the most impressionable. My wife specializes in the connection between autism and schizophrenia, and says, you know, a real full-on schizophrenic, you can get them to believe anything. And it's true. I've witnessed it. And it's a frightening responsibility. You have to be very careful what you say around them. They're paranoid to begin with. And it didn't take these guys long at all through an informant who met him at a mosque, I mean, targeted him there. It didn't take long for him to kind of a normal guy into a Islamic fanatic who believes that somehow he is essential to the destruction of whatever they said it was, you know, terrorism in the U.S. against American foreign policy or something stupid. So schizophrenia was the first thing that popped into my head, and I'm reading, and near the end of it, yes, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. So these are following a very, very typical pattern. Now, after 9/11, and to some extent, some leftists did expose some of this, but not generally speaking. It was mostly some of our people, especially Michael Collins Piper, who was very, very talented in this respect. This has happened dozens, if not hundreds of times. We have the Christopher Cornell case. Just a completely, you know, the article says rudderless, but this directionless slacker. And he was going to build pipe bombs and attack Capitol Hill with them somehow. February of 15, the FBI arrested two guys from Brooklyn, which should send up red flags right away, for plotting with the aid of a paid informant to travel to Syria and join the Islamic State, which is a very odd thing to happen. Of course, the U.S. only cared about Syria and the Russian connection there, and the Baathist sort of national socialism. This is all they cared about, not only for their own ideological mission, but also to control the Middle East in favor of Israel. ISIS was mobilized and created by the U.S. as the one of the, or possibly the most coherent, cohesive opponent of Assad. I was the first one to expose ISIS, and part of it was, if they had the supplies and the officer corps and the standardization and the economy, they had tankers, they had oil tankers, overnight. No one can possibly have taken this ISIS thing seriously, and to this day, people are talking about it like it's a real thing, no matter how blatantly stupid the whole thing is. No doubt, no different than this case, just on a much larger scale. So I'm not sure why joining ISIS at the time would be a problem, since he would be immediately mobilized against Syria, the Syrian government. For them to fight Syria to a standstill, Syria had one of the most advanced Russian-trained and Russian-supplied armies in the Middle East. And that they could fight them to a standstill, really. And of course, both Putin and Assad spoke of what ISIS really was. The point was to use ISIS to frighten the American public, and that's where he was going. And you've seen this all over the internet, these guys, as if joining ISIS is really a problem, even if it was a real organization, because they're allied with the U.S. and, of course, the creation of both the U.S. and Israel. And, of course, it was pure entrapment, because just like in the case we're talking about here, in the Osmakot case, they had no intentions of going over there. The informant, first of all, talked them into the whole thing, said that he knows how I can get you in there, and gave them money, even their travel application, and got them through all of the bureaucratic and barriers that stand in the way between being an American and then wanting to go and fight in Syria. 10 years after 9/11, there were about 500 prosecuted people in terrorism-related cases, that is to say, Patriot Act cases. About half of those were involved, concerned very secretive FBI informants. An additional 160 were the targets of stings, just like the one we're talking about here. And of those cases, about 50 of them, the informant or even an undercover FBI guy led them to their terrorism plots in the same way we're talking about here. Now, the FBI will go to the public and say, well, these are dangerous men, and we use these paid informants and, you know, commuting sentences and everything else because we need to foil attacks before they occur. But none of this was real. To justify continued American presence in the Middle East and in Central Asia, to justify the American empire, not to mention the other more common accusations of money and drug money from Afghanistan and everything else, they have to make people believe that there is this waterfall of terrorism and sleeper cells and all their scaremongering tactics. And when you're talking to people who, and even elite people who don't know the first thing about the politics of the area, you know, they're all Muslims or something like that, and they hate Jews for no reason. I mean, these kind of slogans that you see still in the New York Times, most of these guys, especially those who were directly led, had nothing to do with this. They needed to pad the numbers of what was out there. Now, I've done this with the so-called white supremacists, too. Actually, I spent some time. I went through in the Justice Department's, this is a few years ago, their cases of white supremacist crime. And I saw the names, There were a whole bunch of them. And every single one of these I searched for, it was usually a drug deal. And if the white guy had any friends who may have known somebody who was involved in the TWP or National Alliance or something like that, that's it. This was a racial motivated crime. When these guys were well aware that had nothing to do with it. And even if they had no connections, they just invent it. No one's going to come to their defense. You know, except people like The Intercept. And I know The Intercept has had some trouble with threats before, especially in the Navy SEALs, a very lengthy case, which I've cited many times before. And this was a particularly, you know, this case I'm talking about here, 2012, the FBI, this is a particularly egregious one. But it's not entirely, it's a common and standard procedure. This kid, they amongst themselves, and some of this stuff wasn't meant to be released, they called the guy stupid, they called him retarded. These are fairly ignorant men. He's nervous on camera. He didn't really want to do this. It was the FBI squad supervisor, a guy named Richard Worms, who's the one who called him a retarded fool. He has nothing. But here's what The Intercept says. The agents talk about the prosecutor's eagerness for a Hollywood ending for their sting. How many times have I connected the Hollywood action movie genre with foreign policy reporting and really the mentality of the anti-terror squads? These guys grew up. Everything from Rambo in the 80s to John Wick today. These guys grew up with this as the exciting life, and this is why they go into places like the CIA or the FBI. On tape, although I don't think they knew they were being taped, they were laughing. There is no way this kid, even with our help, is going to do anything like this. The FBI put $500 on his, cash right in his hands, so that he can go and make a down payment on what were very expensive weapons. And the Justice Department had said to these guys, you have to do something like that because we have to go to the public and a jury, whatever, and show that this guy really is a dangerous lunatic. So this is a conspiracy in the normal sense of the term. And this is what they are willing to do to pad their own numbers. And the crimes, the only crimes they care about, many of you are aware that the white supremacist nonsense, there isn't anything. You know, violence or otherwise. So they have to invent it. So they take whenever there's a crime of, not even as victims or perpetrators, but a white guy and black guy vaguely involved in it, or a Hispanic guy, it's automatically a racial crime, even if it's not even reported that way. But this is what they need to show. Oh, there's been 500 cases this month. You look up, I must have looked up 200 of these cases. None of them had any political or racial, because it's a lie. But how many people are going to do that? The transcripts I'm talking about in this particular case were never meant to be revealed. And in fact, they were sealed. The judge, his name is Anthony Porcelli, sealed them and went the next step in placing them under a protective order. And the justification was that we can't have our law enforcement investigative strategy and method exposed to the world. Well, that would be okay if this was actually a law enforcement strategy. It is nothing of the kind. They're inventing criminals. And it's particularly egregious now when the FBI is refusing. You remember, in 2020, the left had a separatist state in Seattle. And look at what they're willing to do with the January 6th people solely because they actually have facts on their side. They're not being subsidized. And the whole thing was created to invent criminals. And you know, Americans are stupid. They love this excitement, you know, and, you know, creating a moral struggle when there isn't one, suppressing all the relevant evidence as to why any of this happened. And yet whole cities were burnt down a short time earlier. So they're inventing crime. Now, when we talk about any statistics in terms of who does what, criminally speaking, we have no idea what's true or what isn't, especially when you're dealing with leftist-style categories like hate crimes or nonsense like this. We all know what happened with Sven. This is an invention. Huge numbers of agents were used in his case. It was the King's Own prosecutor. I forget the term for it, but the highest level of prosecutor was used here. And yet you have whole areas of cities, not just in Britain and elsewhere, that are no-go to cops because gangs control it entirely. About half of Detroit is like that as the police force gets cut and cut and cut. This, however, is their priority. This has nothing to do with law. It's nothing to do with enforcement. This is about empowering the left, or in this particular case, the Zionists and the general approach to foreign policy. Now, I hate to say this, but I believe it was 2015. He was sentenced to 40 years, and he's actually just a couple hours from me in Harrisburg, PA, despite the fact that he was schizophrenic. And there's one comment here, and there has been appeals in his case. You know, this guy did a lot of things that had nothing to do with terrorism, but show that he was unhinged. Anyway, let me give you just another quote, which should alert anybody as to the nonsense here. Democracy, this is him talking, right? Democracy makes the forbidden legal and the legal forbidden, and that's greater infidelity. Whoever enforces it is an infidel, a Satan. And listen to this. Hamas is Satan and the Muslim Brotherhood is Satan. If you don't accept that God is the only legislator, you become a polytheist, and that's what I'm telling you. Now, anyone who knows a little bit about the situation over there realizes how incoherent that statement was. None of it came from him, of course. Why would they have him say that Hamas is Satan? Well, the reason is because that's ISIS's position. That's the American government's position. And, of course, that's the Israeli position. Hamas is an actual opponent of the U.S. Hamas is pro-Iran and is a big part of the politics in the Gaza Strip. And Hezbollah, not too far away from that. Now, saying all this nonsense, I mean, you know, so if this were, I don't even know if this was reported as such, or this came out in the transcripts later, that to accept this as actually coming from him is idiotic. This guy has no idea what he's talking about. And what made me laugh, not just the schizophrenic thing, which I knew right away, but also that when it came down to it, he said, I don't know if this was in court or not, he said, I wanted to go to the Middle East to fight Americans and maybe find a wife. And I went, oh, so finally, something that he actually wants comes out. Of course he wanted to find a wife. You think a guy, you know, a lunatic from the Kosovo War is going to find someone? God, you know, so that was probably his only reason. And I have the feeling that's what they used. That's what the crowbar they got to get him to be interested. The guys who initially, after he was convicted, you know, it was just, this was a huge operation, completely inventing a guy. This guy was he didn't know anything. The 40-year sentence is awful, but the two main guys that the FBI, not agents, but used as informants, disappeared. No one quite knows where they are, and no one's saying anything. This is a disastrous case. And, of course, this is what these two authors, and rightfully so, talk about as just a particularly egregious example. And, you know, the examples just never stop. The entrapment scheme, I mean, even using the legal definition of entrapment, the front company, ANOM, the point of that was to sell hack-proof phones, or that's what they were told, to organized crime. I think what they mean by that is drugs. And then they would use those phones to spy on them. And, you know, something like 27 million messages were used. Now, I don't know who these phones went to. I'm not sure how they could just approach a real drug cartel, although we know the Sinaloa is protected by the U.S. And they, as it turns out, have no idea if those phones were involved in anything illegal. We know that today, and there's a few in Politico had something. Reading a newspaper article is now enough to get you flagged for surveillance. In fact, anybody who has shown any interest in any topic like this gets flagged. In fact, the agency served a subpoena to provide the internet addresses and phone information for anyone who read a certain news story at a particular day. And this concerning the shooting of FBI agents. I have the feeling that, although that may well have occurred, I have the feeling that the article was planted, which they do all the time. USA Today, now again, I don't know how authoritative they are. Agents have authorized criminals to engage as many as 15 crimes a day. Almost 6,000 crimes a year. Informants are being paid huge amounts of money. There was one criminal who was promised a shorter sentence, was paid roughly $85,000 for one of these entrapment schemes. And you had a mass release of mid-level drug dealers from prison. And this was a probe into misconduct by the FBI and to act as informants. Everything they said should never be taken seriously, but if they need a conviction, this is what they do. It's actually one of the big weaknesses of the American system, is that you can get a prisoner, say, who has 40 years. You could say, we'll give you 10 and send you into the program, the witness protection program, if you come out and say such and such a man is a criminal. That's what happened with Jim Trafficant. It happened with a lot of these cases. Again, Michael Collins Piper being particularly expert at that. And so these two articles, again, a bit on the naive side, he's late to the party, but I wanted to revisit that case a little bit. And when you talk about terrorism or crime or anything else, most of what you're talking about simply isn't true. Intelligence, fake news stories, this is day-to-day life. So I'll talk to you next time, everyone. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.